Accession number 27805, Mr. Peter Laker, Reel 4. Now, we got to the point where you'd just been mined, but you hadn't really noticed. If you take up the story, off Sunderland, take up the story from there.
Well, when I came up on deck from my naval store where I slept at night on a camp bed because there wasn't room for me in the mess, I found that the water was lapping at the upper deck of the ship, and to my horror, I found then out that we had been mined during the night, and I slept through it all. So if the ship had gone down, I would have drowned. That was obvious. But anyway,
how bad was the damage? We say it was lapping around the upper deck.
Well, it was in the forward boiler room that they hit. The mine had hit, and so the forward boiler room was flooded. And that's what really took the ship down, because, of course, the water was in there flooding that particular compartment. Anyway, the ship was going along quite smoothly at a very slow pace, and we made the time and tied up at North Shields. We stayed there for an hour, for the day, and then an oiler came alongside and took all the oil off the ship. And then the ammunition all came off. A barge came alongside the next day, and that was all taken off. And some of my naval stores were taken off, and other pieces of equipment which had to be done. And then the crew went on leave for 20 days, except for certain individuals who were kept back aboard. Now, and I was one of those, unfortunately.
Now, what were you meant to be doing while you
I was still destoring, but, of course, mine was just getting, shall we say, manageable things off the ship, which could be carried by hand, so therefore the cranes and things like that weren't required. But after about 3 days, we were towed by a tug up to the Hawthorne Leslie's dry dock, and put in there with a trawler that also had had some damage done and required repairing. And they then emptied the dock, of course, made it into a dry dock, and the hole in there was big enough to get a coach through. Well, I stayed there on board that night, and about on the Sunday that followed, I went ashore to Newcastle Central by train from Hebburn, and found that there was nothing at all to do in Newcastle on a Sunday. I got instructions as to how to get to the Salvation Army club, which I went to and booked a bed for the night, because we were allowed to sleep ashore, and providing we got back on board by 7:30 the next morning, that was all okay. So I didn't know what to do whilst I was in Newcastle, so I wandered round the streets and found the YMCA. And I went in there and got a cup of tea and spoke to one of the helpers, who told me that there were three cinemas that opened on a Sunday night and put on a variety concert. So I got details of that, and went down to one of them called the Isoldo and booked two seats, thinking that I would be very clever and pick up a young lady during the course of the day or evening. I then returned to the YMCA because there was nothing to do, and probably had a meal such as beans on toast or something like that, and a cup of tea, and read the Sunday newspapers. And about 7 o'clock, I wandered down to the Isoldo go to the show, and looked about for a bird, but couldn't see one. And then suddenly I saw a girl looking very furtively up and down the road, looking for someone. So I approached her and said something like, "I suppose you've been let down too," and which he replied, "No, I'm waiting for my sister and her boyfriend." So I thought, that's a likely story if ever there was one. But anyway, eventually Nan, her sister, and her boyfriend, Rob, came along. By this time, Kath, and I got on Christian name terms with her, told Nan and Rob what had happened and that I was on my own and so forth. And so Nan said, well, why don't you go with Peter to the show and we'll sell your ticket at the box office and meet you after the show. So that was what happened. And we went into the stalls and Kath and I talked to each other and became quite open with each other, and we enjoyed each other's company, obviously. Kath was, in fact, getting over an engagement that she'd broken off with a chap in the RAF some few weeks before. And I don't think she trusted men in general in that sense. But she was a gauger in the Vickers Armstrong munitions section on Scotswood Road, Newcastle. And, of course, she worked shifts, and she had a pretty dirty job, I gather, from what she said. Anyway, I got her. When we came out of the show, I took her down to the Marlborough Crescent bus stop where her bus for Bladen went, along with Dan and Rob, of course. And I got her to write her name and address, because her name was Heenigan, which is a very unusual name, or was to me. And she put this on the last page of the back cover of my diary, and she wrote it in a nail white pencil, the only thing she had that could do it, well, to put the address in. And so that was the end of the evening. I went back to the Salvation Army and, of course, went to bed, went back on board ship next day to be told that the following day I could go on 10 days leave. And I was a bit miffed about that, because I was only getting 10 days and everybody else was getting 22 or 20. Anyway, eventually the ship, well, I went on leave to Brighton to see my father and mother, and I went out with a different girl every night that I was home. But I was not really bothered about going out with them, because I felt sure I was in love with Kathleen, and I was definitely in love. So anyway, when I got back to Newcastle, I wrote to her and said I was back, and I think we met on another occasion before the ship left the dry dock, having been repaired and taken down to, I think, North Shields again to re-oil and put the ammunition and the stores back on. Anyway, we then went back to Rosyth and joined in North East convoys for a few more trips.
So the ship was fully repaired. And this would be your future wife, would it?
Yes, it was, yeah. Yes. But the rather interesting thing, I think, is that on a Sunday, if we were in harbour and I got leave from 12 noon, we used to catch a train from Rosyth Dockyard round to Edinburgh. I can't remember the name of the street that it was in. Anyway, the station there. And there I would board a train for Newcastle, and the cost of the fare return was £1. I think it was quite amazing to think that I could go all the way from Edinburgh down to Newcastle for £1. When I got to Newcastle, which usually took the train about two and a half hours, depending on how things were going, I walked up to Marlborough Crescent, got the bus, went to Bladen, where I saw Kathleen. We used to go for a walk or go and see some of her friends before going back to her house, and I stayed there till 2:30 in the morning with Kathleen before getting on a bike, riding into Newcastle station to catch a train back to Edinburgh, and of course getting back from Edinburgh to Rosyth a dockyard by the extra train that they put on for us. So I did that trip, I think, two or three times, if my memory serves me right.
Now, how long were you on the Northeast run for?
Well, I think we're on for about 18 months, all told.
Any other incidents you recall from that time?
Well, I remember that we did, in fact, go on the Pentland Firth round there a couple of times.
Now, what was that like? What was that about? What were you doing then?
We were still taking ships round, but the Pentland Firth, as I expect you know, it's very, very rough at times, and it can be very flat, but every time I would seem to go around there, it seemed to be very rough.
Now, we haven't really talked about the rough weather, because you mentioned that you had to go on deck to get back.
Yeah.
What was it like in rough weather in the Pentland Firth on a V-class destroyer?
Well, it was quite hazardous, really, although, in fairness, V&W boats were good ships from their point of view weather-wise. We didn't have much scary moments, but nevertheless, it was pretty uncomfortable at times.
How much were you thrown about? Were they dry ships? I mean, some people have said they're very wet, the V&W, and other people don't seem to think so.
Well, the one I was on, I think, was reasonable. I couldn't say that we were very wet, by no means. But occasionally, of course, you did get a sea which caused you to be wet, but not very often. I found them a good sea-going ship.
And the other thing I didn't ask is, did you ever get seasick? I should have asked this really. I mean, because
the first time we hadn't got under the fourth bridge and I was seasick. So there we are. But it lasted about, I suppose, 1.5 trips. And then I got my sea legs, and I never seasick again.
Was there anything special was there anything you did that stopped you being seasick, or was it just you got used to it?
I suppose I got used to it because that was all you could do. Nothing else.
Anything else aboard the ship that you recall?
Yes, we got sent round to Londonderry and were assigned to the Atlantic convoys.
Now, when was that? Do you know when that happened?
Well, that was towards the October, I think.
October?
Of 1942, or thereabouts. Yes, be about that. But we couldn't stay on that because we hadn't got the oil capacity to go across the Atlantic.
So tell me, what were the Atlantic convoys like?
Well, they were... from what I remember, and we usually got the job of being out on the wing of the convoy looking for submarines. Well, we never really saw much action there because we could not go very far. We could only go about 3 days out and have to come back again because of the oil.
Now, had your duties changed at all during this time?
No, I was still doing the same job completely, but the ship itself, having been in Londonderry, was transferred round to the Pollock Dock at Belfast, and we were assigned to the Irish Sea convoys.
Now, what were they like?
Well, the Irish Sea is one of those oceans, I'm afraid, which could be flat 1 minute and a raging gale in half an hour. So sometimes it was a very, very hazardous journey that we had.
How bad was the weather?
Well, it could be very bad down there about that time. End of October, November, it really was rough.
So you only actually did a month at Londonderry, from the looks of things.
Well, about two or three, could be about that.
Now, around about the same time, November, you got promotion. Now, this is, I think, where you're going to leave
Viceroy. Yeah.
How did you come to get promotion?
Well, I think the fact that I've been in the Navy for 2 years set alarm bells ringing as to why I wasn't promoted. And so they sent for me, and I saw an officer from the base and talked to him for a while. And he said, well, you're going to make you a leading hand. And, of course, that meant that the job I was doing aboard Viceroy was lower than the leading rank. So, therefore, I had to leave the ship.
How did you feel about leaving the ship?
Sad in some ways, but when I think about it, I think I was pleased to be leaving, to get back on shore for a little while. I didn't mind going. I've been on 2 years, and that was long enough, perhaps.
Now, where were you sent to? You'd go back to the barracks.
Yes, I went back to Portsmouth, yes. Royal Naval Barracks at Portsmouth.
And there, what happened there? That's November 42. What happened?
Well, I did the rejoining procedure and so forth. And when I got the drafting office and put mine in, an officer called me in and said that you've been at sea 2 years. There's a base job here for a leading hand. Would you be interested? And I said, oh, yes, please. So they made me a part of the base staff, and he told me that it would be for a six-month stretch. So having been told that, I got in touch with Kathleen, went and saw her. I managed to wangle a weekend leave and went up to Newcastle and tried to persuade her to get married, because I thought, if I'm going to be in Portsmouth for 6 months, we might as well be together during that time. And although she was a bit reluctant at first, her parents were very much all for it.
So when were you married?
I was married on the 30th of January, 1943.
Now, what was a wartime marriage like? I mean, because, you know, they were short of everything. How did you organise the wartime marriage?
Well, I think my mother-in-law did most of it, bless her. She made Kathleen's dress, and she made the bridesmaid's dress. Where she got the material from is, I just have no idea. But it was a very, wedding feast, because of rationing, although my father-in-law managed to get a bit of stuff. But I suppose in regard to comparison to present-day marriages, it was a very, very dull affair.
And what about where we? She was obviously she'd come to live in Portsmouth, I presume.
Yes.
Did she live? Were you given? Did you move out with her into accommodation, or was she just in a flat? What happened?
Well, we had a flat in Southsea, Elm Grove, Southsea, and I was out of the barracks. I had a living allowance, a ration book, and so of course I lived in the flat with Kathleen, and I could do that most nights. Occasionally I had to do a duty on the barracks, and in that case she used to go out to the landlady and stay with her during that evening. But if the air raid sirens went, then again I would have to go back to the barracks and report in to take up duty.
Now, what were your duties? You'd been offered this job for 6 months. What were you doing? What you were doing.
I was sent to the beef screen,
the beef screen?
The beef screen was where all the meat and all the vegetables for the barracks came to. So we had what was called a tanky butcher. He was a permanent member of staff like me, but he was not a very old man, in inverted commas, and so he was there on a permanent basis. And he used to train these other sailors who were going to become butchers aboard ships, so that when a hind quarter of beef came in, he would explain to them and show them how it was to be cut up, and they would learn by experience. And from the beef screen, I would get instructions from the general mess office as to how much meat and how much vegetables had to be taken to each galley to cope for the mess, or the number of messes covered by that galley.
So you'd organise the meat, once it had been cut up, you'd assign it to whichever galley?
Yes, that is the way.
Depending on the number of people who are in the galley?
Yes.
How did you like that work?
Oh, very much, because frankly I was virtually on my own, and had my own power, so to speak, and could come and go from the barracks as I please. So it was a lovely job. And of course, I'm afraid, as is usually the case, there was a bit of, and I hate to use the word black market, going on, where I must say that Kathleen and I lived very well.
Just to make sure it doesn't sound too bad, that's just, you got a bit of extra meat for yourself. You weren't selling meat, though.
Oh, no. I wouldn't sell meat by any means. No. But, I mean, nearly all the staff in the barracks were involved. I mean, I make no secret of the fact that some of the officers and senior petty officers and so forth would come and pick up their little share if they were going home on leave.
Now, anything happened while, I mean, was there any still air raids going on? I'm not for sure whether there was air raids or not in Portsmouth at that time.
Yes, there was a lot of air raids going on at the time.
Did you have an air raid shelter at Elm?
No, we didn't at Elm Grove. And I say, Kathleen used to go and stay with the landlady, and she lived upstairs above us. So if the house had been hit, I'm afraid that there would have been casualties. But
how serious were the German air raids?
Well, they were indiscriminate, as far as I could see. I mean, they were supposed to be bombing the barracks and the harbour and so forth, but they hit mainly, Southsea was almost flattened. We were very lucky where we were.
Were there any bombs near?
I think the nearest one was in the street next to us. That's the nearest.
And anything else happened while you were there?
Well, we had two friends, Nobby and Charlie. They were in the Portsmouth Fire Brigade, and I knew them through the Tock Age, because prior to coming down into the flat, I used to stay at the Tock Age, and Nobby and Henry, I should say, used to be firemen, and when they were off duty, they used to go to the Tock Age too. And we became good friends. So when I was in the barracks on duty, if Henry and Nobby were off that time, not on duty in other words, then they would go around and see Kathleen and take her out for coffee and go for walks with her.
Now what about Tock Age? What did that offer? What was Tock Age?
Well, Tock Age was a little club from the First World War, I think, was the origins of it. But they were very, very good. There was two people there who managed it, so to speak, a woman and a man. And they were very friendly, and I enjoyed the company there, very much so.
Was it very religious? I mean, it was originally a religious thing. But
it was, but no, religion wasn't thrown at you. I mean, there were obvious signs of religion, but you went there, so they accepted you as visitors, so to speak, to the club, and they would feed you and talk to you and make rooms available for you.
Now, how you got this posting for 6 months, so you'd gone there, in November 42, so were you there into mid-53, or would that be?
Yes, I did more than my 6 months.
So how long were you there for?
I think I was there for about 8 months.
So till July?
Yes, after that.
After July?
Yeah, September.
September. And then 43. And anything else about your time there?
Well, I saw a lot of people come and go, of course. And I suppose, really speaking, I became what it was called a barrack stanchion, from the point of view that I thoroughly enjoyed being able to go home after work, so to speak, and not have the bother of staying in the barracks with all the mob, so to speak.
Did you mind being, you know, p- part of the staff. You'd done your bit. I mean, were you pleased to be on the...
Well, I was, from the point of view of being able to get married, which was, of course, the big feature of it all, and living literally a married life, as if it was in pre-war.
Now, how did you come to get drafted?
Well...
The next draft, rather.
Well, after that, they said to me about September, you now had your period, you've got to be drafted. And I said, yes, I want to go back to sea. And they said, well, we want to put you on combined operations. And I said, well, whereabouts is that then? Well, that's on the Isle of Wight, of fresh water. But they, prior to that, of course, Catholic, having decided that I was going to go back to sea, Kathleen, to all intents and purposes, went back to Newcastle. She was pregnant at the time, so she went back home, and I went over to the Isle of Wight.
Now, what was this posting to?
Well, I can't remember what they called the place, but it was a holiday camp there. It was near Bembridge, I think it was. And
Were you at Freshwater Bay or Bembridge? Because they're
Bembridge. And we used to be taken by bus over to Freshwater to these combined operation barges. And I can't ever remember exactly what I did whilst I was there. But it wasn't very much, I assure you. It was a boring situation.
What sort of training was going on? I mean, were you just not involved? Were you just
I was not involved with anything. I used to go to barges and to the... office at Freshwater and stand around, I think, most of the time.
Were you acting as a leading, you know, steward?
I didn't have any duties as far as I can remember. I think it was quite a gash job. I think they wanted to get rid of me from barracks, and that they thought was a good job to give me, which, of course, from their point of view, was getting rid of me, but I didn't have anything to do.
And that lasted for how long?
It lasted for about 3 or 4 months.
So into about, what, March 44?
Yeah, somewhere about that, I think.